Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, I bet you're loving the weather right now, where it's sunny, there's a chill. You must be loving this weather.
This is totally my kind of weather, because as a guy who is, how do I say this, built for cold, can I say that politely? I'm built for the cold. Yeah. I love this. It's so fresh. It's beautiful. I don't love the summer. Some people love the summer. I get why they do. My wife, she's a hothouse flower. You can't, like, the house can't be warm enough for her. We're one of those classic couples where you wish you could, like, have a bed that was 10 degrees cooler from left side to right. So this, for me, is my time to shine. Love it. Between now and about December the 1st is perfect weather.
I myself still choose summer, but, like, yeah. No, this is, it's really nice. I'm still more of a summer guy. Second question before we get to sports and stuff. You sent out a tweet about you're going to get some wine. Did you buy a bottle? You were asking for advice. You got angry at my advice. Did you find something?
Two things. I didn't, because I decided I'm going to drink this whole thing and feel terrible, not having learned the lessons of moderation. So I just decided to opt out. And secondly, I wasn't mad at your advice. I was mad at your lack of advice. As a sommelier, I've asked you several times, what wine do you think I should buy? And you always give very, very general advice. You'll be like, something from this region in France, which is probably great if you know a lot about wine. But to an idiot like myself, I need something more specific. I need this to be, like, you're giving me the IKEA instructions, and I need, like, the Chef Boyardee open can, put in pot instructions.
I get it. But as I said, the problem is that if I give you a specific producer and it's not at the LCBO, then what? So I like to sort of guide you. I'm like Amazon. You know how, like I'm like the supply chain. I'm good for the first 100 miles, but the last mile is always the hardest. So I'll get you close, but if the winery or the producer isn't there, then what?
Okay. Well, I think you're overthinking things, because you're used to dealing with people who think as deeply about this as you do. But I am the unwashed masses in this. I'm asking you because I literally don't know anything. I compared online you to, like, if someone were to say to me, hey, Bob, because I talk a lot about music, what's interesting and new? And I said, oh, you should try some hip hop, maybe something from New York.
Ooh.
Well, that's not really going to be helpful, though, is it? There's probably 100 records out today that are new from New York in the genre of hip hop.
It starts you on the journey, but it's still a long way to go. But this,
See, here's the thing, right? You love that because you love the journey. You're like, oh, I can experiment. I can do this. Whereas I am literally like, I have $20. I want to hand it to someone and they will give me a wine. What should I get back for my $20? Not journey, well, function, task.
Gugel Cote de Rhone. Next time, go with that.
I'm going to spell Gugel. G-O-O-G-A-L.
Perfect. You nailed it.
Thank you. I got a question for you before we get into sports. This is a classic Cause kind of conundrum to puzzle, okay?
Yeah.
How long can you leave a line before you give up your place in that line? I think we all agree, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I got to pick up an apple, right? And you run to the apple section, you grab an apple, you come back in. And I think there's a certain decorum. You go, okay, no problem, because that might take 15, 20 seconds, right?
Yeah.
How long and what are the conditions under which you give up your place in line? And I'll tell you why. I'm waiting for my coffee this morning, and there's one guy, or there's two people in front of me. The person directly in front of me leaves the line. I'm like, okay, well, he can go grab something and come back. But he's standing at this rack of juices for about 60 seconds. And I started thinking, well, he's given up his place in line then. Like, he's browsing. He didn't just go to pick something up. He's browsing. Then he sort of hovers. When the person in front of me leaves, he angles back in and get this, Matt. orders a breakfast treat that needed to be warmed up and a coffee that required the froth machine.
Oh, fuck him.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, no, no. The amount of time, 30 seconds. And here's the thing. You better run. Like, you can't, or at the very least, you've got to walk at a very aggressively brisk pace. Anything before, like you got to convey to the world, I'll be right back. Like, this guy here, like, just the narcissism of this individual. They knew what they were doing. Fuck that person.
I think you really nailed it, and I hadn't put the language to it in my own head, but you're right. You want to see the person acknowledges that you're doing them a solid by letting them back in. And the way they acknowledge that is by hustling.
Yeah.
It's not unlike what we like about our athletes. You cannot score, but you can't not go into the corner and try to get the puck. Effort is the distinguisher between what we'll accept and what we won't accept.
Yes. It's the same way. I don't mind people jaywalking. I got no problem with it at all. I do it all the time. Right. But I hate when the person just walks and forces the car to slow down. That's not how this works. If you wanted, like, the idea is, my goal is, if I'm going to jaywalk, I don't want anyone have to slow down because of me, whether it's a car or someone on a bike. So you just got to put in that effort and then jaywalk away.
So you and I need to create something called the unofficial social contract, where it's just a list of rules that if we abide by these, they're the rules inside the rules. Like, jaywalking is wrong, but ... not if you do it quickly.
Yeah.
Leaving the line is wrong ... unless you hurry back and you're only there to get one more thing.
Yes.
I like this. The unofficial rules. No, the unofficial social contract. You're big on social contract.
Huge.
Your big thing is when narcissism gets in the way of decent behavior. That is like the ultimate cause sin.
It's infuriating. Let me give you a quick example. Like, when I was going for a run yesterday and I had to just spit, I will not do it on a sidewalk. Right. I will not do it if someone I feel an eye shot. I will wait so no one is around, and if I have to spit, it's spitting in a bush. Because, again, it's that unofficial official social contract. There's just certain things you do.
You know, Matt, I wish... Jeez, we've got so much sports to get to. I promise we'll get there. But you raise a really valid point, and it also makes me think, I don't know if you were this kid, but when we were kids, spitting was a big deal. You could be cool if you were good at spitting. My buddy Bob Slowacki could just basically... Hang on, sorry, first text came through. My buddy Bobby Slowacki could spit, and it was like a laser. And it was effortless for him, and I could never do that. And Bob was the alpha. He had the hardest slap shot. He could spit like crazy. He could flip bottle caps. Like, every little rascal's guy skill, Bob was amazing at it. But kids today, I don't think they spit the way we used to. We used to practice.
We had nothing else to do. We didn't have a phone with pornography on it, you know, like, or video games or whatever. You know, it's like, that's what we had. All we had.
You make a great point. By the way, I've really got to learn how to turn off this. I work for Apple, and I don't know how to turn off the sound notifications. I got to get better at this. Okay, let's talk sports. Do you want to do Raptors or Leafs first? Or do you want to do Jays? Because Jays are certainly timely now. I'll let you steer the course, oh, Captain, my captain.
Let's do the Raptors. Are you ready? Like, you had an idea for the show today about basically like a poker analogy of fold, raise, or stay, correct?
Yeah, I throw out a stat, and you tell me if you would double down or if you'd raise it. Check, which means you basically agree with the premise, or fold. Like, for example, William Nylander will score 35 goals this year. Raise, check, or fold?
I would, I haven't played poker in ages. Which is the one where I agree with it, and I think you've hit the number basically straight on?
I think that's check. I mean, basically in the check. Sense that you're kind of like, you're not upping it, and you're not bailing. You're sort of just waiting to see how it plays out, but you're kind of good.
Okay, I would check that. So I got one for you, Bob.
Okay.
The Raptors, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but I was thinking about it this morning. And if you want to go super hot take with a super small sample size, the Raptors need to trade Pascal Siakam.
Oh. Are you going to throw that one out on Twitter? And if you do, do you put on a bulletproof vest?
Yeah, I'm not going to throw that out on Twitter because I don't know if you know this. Twitter gets angry. And I have something else I threw out on Twitter that we'll discuss in a little bit. But Scotty Barnes has been a revelation. OG Anunoby is growing as his role as a playmaker. And having those two and Siakam all together in the front court, and sometimes you need a center or else Robert Williams gets 8 offensive rebounds against you with the Celtics. I don't know if it can work. Maybe it can. Nick Nurse is a great coach. They're all smart guys. Fred VanVleet, really good point guard. But just throw it out there. Trade Siakam.
Okay, let's take this point by point. You're not suggesting because Siakam is a bad player. You're nope. suggesting that there are other things, like other dynamics within the team that are growing, and now there are redundancies. And so he becomes an expendable asset that could get you something you really need, which is some size down low. And we know that the Raptors will struggle against teams. And we saw it when they played Washington. There's just times where they're just not big enough to deal with the opposition. And as the game slows down, that's going to be more and more true as they become a playoff team. Okay. Do you have any hypothetical deals?
No, not as of yet. This was something I just thought of this morning. And then when I saw your text, I'm like, oh, would Bob raise, fold, or check? Time to trade Siakam.
I'm going to fold on this one.
Yeah.
And I talked a lot about trading Siakam previously. But I think now that I didn't think this would be a very good team. I'm happy to have been wrong. I'm not sure they're a good team, but they're certainly okay. I thought they would be bad. But I didn't expect Scotty Barnes to be able to score 18 plus a night. They told us he had no offense. Well, that hasn't been the case. He's the best or the second best rookie in a very talented class. I thought Fred would be good. I thought OG would be good. But, you know, Ken Birch has played really well. Gary Trent Jr., I didn't expect this. I didn't think he would turn into a steel machine. I thought there would be more bumps on the road than there have been so far. And Pascal hasn't even really been back yet. So now I think you owe it to this team to see how good they can be with this start. Now, it's funny. I was watching last night, and I was thinking about how here are two teams, like with the Sixers. With the Raptors and the Sixers, that didn't have their stars on the floor. And the Raptors just beat Philly. And the Raptors didn't have a good Pascal Siakam. And Philly didn't have Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons. And I started thinking, if Embiid was back and they actually got a reasonable haul for Simmons, they would fucking crush the Raptors. Even if Siakam was in the lineup. Like, they played them basically to a standstill. They were missing two superstars, and the Raptors were missing one. That kind of was a reality check for where this team really is. A middle-of-the-conference team with a bunch of young players that are still growing.
Kind of cool.
So, let me pull out a thought here. Are we at the point where Scotty needs minutes? Like, are you thinking he's played well enough that it's kind of crazy to have Scotty coming off the bench when he's averaging 18 plus, 8 boards, you know, great defense? Like, the Raptors aren't that good where they can afford to have a guy that good sit on the bench.
It's never going to happen. He started game one against Washington. He started every game since. The funny thing is Nick Nurse has actually said this guy's got to take more shots. Mm-hmm. We're never going to see Scotty Barnes on the bench. I think, like, if Siakam is back, then it might be OG. And even that seems crazy. Like, it's just, and this is up to Nurse. How do you have those three together playing 30 minutes a night together and getting the best out of all of them?
So, in theory, I agree with you. But then I look at the Cavaliers who have Mobley, Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen, and they're all bigs. And there are times where they go jumbo, and the three of them will be on the court at the same time. And they found a way to make it work. And I think part of that is because Jared Allen is really underrated. But two, Evan Mobley is just incredible. Like, God, he's going to be so good. But because it's Scotty Barnes and he can do so many things, does that give you more flexibility to have those three on the court at the same time?
Well, he played a lot of, he played some point guard at Florida State. So yes, certainly he's got versatility.
You know, if is the idea that all these guys that Masai wants, you know, these interchangeable 6'8", 6'9", guys with long arms, well, this would be an example of proving that they really are interchangeable with all of them on the court at the same time. Do you think, are you skeptical that that can be true?
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical. I haven't seen it happen. The NBA is a game that's going away from size. And the problem is, if you have those three guys, there's also nights where you're going to need Ken Birch to be out there for 28, 32 minutes a night.
One of the things for sure that has let the Raptors down is that, I mean, Ken Birch has been fine. Like, he's been good, but he's been good for what you expect to get from Ken Birch. Precious isn't there yet. Boucher has been mostly bad. You know, they've got issues there. And I wonder if that was cleaned up, if the other guys wouldn't be so desperate. Let me throw this out at you, though, before we get into too much rosterbation. Asset management. A fully healthy, or at least healthier, Pascal Siakam with a better shoulder, playing at full speed. Do you let him get 30 or 40 games and maybe flip him at the deadline so that people can see he's still a guy who's an all-star? Does he still need to prove it on the open market?
Yeah, you just need a little recency bias. He comes back, you know, and it's good. And by the way, you know, it's going to take a while, and maybe this wild speculation goes away because he comes back, he's ingratiated in the offense and everything. You know, you can see that there is a future of having the three of them. But there might be a little bit of redundancy at that position. Yeah. And you bring Siakam back, and he can go out and kick ass. Again, most of this conversation is because just how good Scotty Barnes has looked. That's the impetus behind all this. And if he looks really good, Siakam, you could get a ton for him.
I agree with you. And that was always my thought before. But now I want to see this experiment because Scotty's ready to participate in it. The Masai Ujiri philosophy, what you call redundancy, he sees as interchangeability and flexibility. Yep. And Nick Nurse, with that excellent asset added to this in Siakam, what can he do with that? Does it stop him from doing the things he wants to do, or does it enable him to do new and even better things? And I think we owe, like, I wanted Pascal dealt last year. You know, I thought Scotty Barnes wouldn't be this good, but he's ready to be a part of a mad scientist scheme, I think, in a pretty meaningful way. And OG, you made a great point about OG's ability to facilitate now. God, he had some nice passes last night. I believe he only had 4 assists, but the point was he had 4 assists that were smart.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't a cheapy, you know, second assist in hockey. Like, he made some really great passes at some key times. I'm curious to see the interchangeability, buddy. Like, here I am. I was ready to, you know, put dirt on the Raptors, and now I'm saying, no, you can't break them up. They're so good. What a hypocrite.
So you're saying my 35 and a half win over bet is looking a little bit better?
I'd say a lot better.
And again, all it takes is an injury. And also, needs to be said, the Raptors have not had the hardest schedule. The Raptors have been at home more. So they've had a nice, soft start to the year. It's going to get harder.
Totally. And the starters, you know, the bench isn't that deep, and it's going to start to wear down on them in January and February. But
yeah, so
they're just, look, but it's Nick a nice start. A really good coach. Yeah, it's a great start. And these wins count to the final total. That's the thing. Like, they're not coming out and starting 4-8. Like, they're banking wins. And even if they do hit the skids in February, the wins they're getting, you know, in October and November are still going to count. So, yeah, I think I'm going to lose this bet. But yeah.
I hope so.
I'm really happy. I hope so.
Yeah.
I didn't put any money on it. I got no pride to protect, so I hope I lose.
Yeah.
Here's my question for you with regards to the Raptors. How much how much stock do you put in Fred at this point? I was watching yesterday, and Fred looked great. And I was a little suspicious, but are we ready to call him, like, is it his team now?
Yeah, it is his team. He's the wise old veteran who's not even 30. You know, he has full old soul in him, which you need. I love the fact that he's very comfortable in the role of, like, I forget which game it was, one of their last, I think their win before this one, where he just decided, okay, I'm not going to shoot much. A whole bunch of assists in the first quarter. Here's an alley-oop for you, Precious Achiuwa, because we need to get you going. And he's just, you know, he's got that the perfect attitude of, I don't care about points. And you need that from your point guard in the situation how it is for the Raptors. So, yeah, yeah. He is the leader of this team. He sounds and acts a lot like Kyle Lowry. So, yes, full marks to Fred VanVleet.
He acts and sounds so much like Kyle Lowry. It's like he was a young quarterback who studied at the foot of a master. And then as one sort of faded away, someone jumps in and takes all those lessons and applies them.
Yeah.
It's one of the most amazing examples of mentorship I can remember seeing in any sport, really. And it's a real tribute to Kyle that he so willingly coached up his own replacement. And you just never see, like, Kyle is a borderline Hall of Famer. And most guys who make the Hall of Fame aren't that interested in other people's success, quite frankly. Certainly not when it comes at the expense of their own, potentially. And man, is it ever a tribute to that guy that he literally took an undrafted player and coached him up to a point where he could take over the team. Amazing.
Yep. It is.
By the way, I'm getting tired of Kyle Lowry trending on Twitter every day. Like, I love him too, everybody. Now, please stop.
Well, you know how we would sometimes complain that why does the American media ignore the Raptors? And the pushback would be, stop it. You're being insecure. You got a chip on your shoulder. Well, I think the fact that everyone is raving about Kyle Lowry with the Miami Heat perfectly proves the point. Everyone from the States ignores the Raptors. We knew this was going to happen. We knew exactly what Lowry would do, the impact he could have on the Miami Heat. It was so predictable. So to hear everyone go, wow, look at this. It's like, yeah, we've been watching that for years. You haven't been watching it.
To your point, Scotty Barnes, you know, you're starting to see these NBA think pieces. You know, he might actually be the best rookie in this class. Oh, really? Just because he has the most points, the most rebounds, and he's playing incredible defense? Oh, you think he just might be the best? You mean, I guess what's supporting your argument there, NBA think tank, is all the facts?
Yeah.
100%. By the way, there, I've said this on Twitter a bunch of times. People don't really jump on it because I don't think they see this yet, not in its fullness. Mobley versus Barnes is going to be incredible for the next 10 years. If both those guys stay with their teams and they turn out to both be who they could be, oh my God, it's going to be bird and magic. Like, both of these guys have the chance to be in the top 10 best players in the NBA. They're going to see each other a lot, and they're coming in at the same time. One picked third, the other picked right after him. That is, as an NBA fan, I'm beside myself watching that.
It's so true. And there's going to be people wondering, wait, guys, you're rushing this. And I get it. But basketball, more than any other sport, sometimes you just know. Kevin Durant coming out and for like a minute, unprompted, just praising Scotty Barnes. That got everyone's attention. And Jason Kidd doing the same thing like a week and a half earlier. Like, just stars recognize stars. And there is something really cool happening with Scotty Barnes.
I watched Evan Mobley and the Cavs play the Knicks. I don't know if you caught that game. It's just like a random midweek game. But I thought, yeah, you know, there was no Raptors on, and I just kind of wanted to see how Mobley looked. And a little bit, you know, just to catch up on the Knicks to see how they were doing. And Mobley played so well. And like a vet, it was just weird to watch a guy like, you know, who's almost 7 feet tall. Ordinarily, these guys take a year or two to prosper. And he just plugged right in into the garden in a clutch situation. Like, over the course of the fourth quarter, he just looked so reliable. And it was so effortless for him. And he did so many smart things. And then the next night, you know, Scotty Barnes goes out and does exactly the same thing. It's like this veteran composure with this youthful enthusiasm. These guys are going to be amazing. They're kind of amazing now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially like Barnes. And I mean, especially Mobley. Like Mobley right now looks like here's the clear cut number one rookie. And Scotty Barnes is number two.
I that's how I would rank them too. I think over the course of the year, I don't know what it's going to be like when Scotty Barnes hits the wall. Like, are we all going to start panicking? You know, we're all so funny with this. Like, you get super excited when things are good and you panic when things are bad. You know, that's what being a fan is. You live game to game, right? Like when the Leafs lose to the Kings after winning, what was it, four or five in a row? And all of a sudden, all the think pieces are, this is exactly why this team sucks. Guys, they're not going to win a ball.
Funny thing is, that game, it didn't bother me. Like, I went back and rewatched it, and the Leafs had a bunch of chances early on. Like, it was a bad game and only one shot from the core four in the first period. But that Kings game, you know, it didn't really bother me that much.
There are rare teams that losing is such an insult to them that they just can't handle it. Like, you think about the Bulls under Michael. You think about those Oilers teams with Messier and Gretzky. There are just certain clubs. I think the Golden State Warriors got to this point where they took losing really personally. To borrow from the Jordan meme, you know, and I took that personally. That's not the Leafs, guys. The Leafs haven't won a playoff round yet. They don't have the right to say we lost and we just can't be that team anymore. You have to win at least a playoff round before your team gets that kind of swagger, you know?
Yeah.
And the fans seem to think, like, somehow you win five in a row and it's proof that you are like that Oilers team. You know, they're going to have up periods and down periods. Like, I kind of feel like the Leafs are just going to go as the shooting percentages go. Like, when they're hot, they'll be really hard to beat. And when those four guys aren't scoring, they're going to be really easy to beat.
They're 26th in scoring right now. That, like, it's and a lot of it says what you just said, Bob, shooting percentage. And I get it. The shooting percentage is low, but we're all still just kind of waiting for where's that 12-game stretch where the blue wave is back.
Yeah, the blue wave. I remember the blue wave. I think I was wrong about the Raptors. I said that I thought they would be under 36 wins, and I think I'm wrong based on what I've seen. I also thought the Leafs were going to be a team that squeaked into the playoffs and would struggle to get out of the first round, and I still think that, despite what we've seen. I'm not so sure that all the things that everyone panicked about 3 weeks ago about the Leafs are really gone. You know, like, this team is a bit Jekyll and Hyde, for sure, but they're in all the eggs in one basket kind of team. When those four guys play good, they're really hard to beat. But it's a pretty big gamble to think that those four guys all together are going to always be good.
The spirit, like when you watch a horror movie, like where the spirit is living in the home and there's 10 minutes left and you think it's gone, but the spirit's still there and it'll come back and scare the shit out of you. That's the Leafs. They win five in a row and they're like, oh, everybody, the exorcism worked. The spirit has left. And it's like, nope, look over there in the corner. You see that little shadow? Yeah, that's the spirit. Still here.
By the way, the most egregious example of that, I watched Poltergeist again recently, the original from 82. There is no justification for that family sleeping in the house again after they got the daughter back.
Oh, horrible mother, like Craig T. Nelson, shame on you. Yes, like just such bad parenting. It amazed me. It's like, what are you doing there? Just everyone stand on the road and everyone look in a different direction and keep your eyes peeled. That's what you do.
Okay, the TV eats your child and takes her to another dimension. Okay, no one saw that coming. There was an ancient burial ground underneath the new homes that were constructed. Okay, you didn't know. You got the kid back and you slept in the house again. That's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Child Protective Services needs to be brought in at that exact moment. You don't need a priest. You need Child Protective Services.
That's exactly it. We should have horror movie social workers who grade people's cases.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like to all the parents that let their teenager go work at Camp Crystal Lake, because don't worry, the murdering's done. All those parents as well. Your kids, we're taking your kid away from you.
So the first time things happen, the second time you could go, okay, maybe it was a freak occurrence. But by the third or fourth slaughter, maybe it's not a good summer job.
Yeah.
By the way, you and I need to do a night where we just have like a Jason-a-thon. Mm. And I want the final one to be Jason Takes Manhattan, which I've decided is the worst slash best horror movie of all time. Yes. The fact that most of it takes place on a ferry as he's going to Manhattan because they couldn't afford to shoot in Manhattan, so they shot in Vancouver.
It's so true. Like, they spent like 10 minutes. They spent like 10 minutes there.
It's called Jason Takes Manhattan, and he spends 10 minutes there.
Yeah.
He took it pretty quick.
Yeah. It's like Jason stayed in a hostel outside of Staten Island for the night. But
Jason takes Rochester.
Yeah. He never even made it there.
Let's go back to the Leafs for a second.
Sure.
What do we said we would do revision of certain things after a certain number of games. I can't remember if this is 10 games or not, but I feel like, okay, after the Philly win, this week's an interesting one because we watched them play really well against Philly and we watched them play poorly against Los Angeles. What do you feel like you know about this team that you didn't know 10 games ago?
Very little. Maybe Jack Campbell deserves our trust.
I kind of think you're right on this one. I was walking this morning, getting my coffee, and I was thinking this question because I knew we were going to talk about it. What do I feel like I know for certain? And the answer was almost nothing. I feel really comfortable saying Nylander is going to have a career best year or close to it.
Yes.
And I feel surprisingly comfortable that Jack Campbell feels like a goalie you can kind of trust. I hope it continues because goalies are like Newfoundland weather. I mean, a storm could blow in at any time, but he's been really calm. He's made big saves, and he's won them a couple games, which is exactly what you wanted. Peter Mrazek is a concern, obviously. Hasn't looked good, been hurt. So if anything happens to Campbell, that could be the season in a nutshell. Feel like there's one line of defense here. You know, they need him. But good gamble on him. God, he's going to be expensive at the end of this year, isn't he?
Hey, that, you know what? The best thing that could have happened for Jack is that we're worried about his contract. That means he's done his job, or that he's doing his job. Yes. When there was like the 3 days without a game, I'm like, oh, we're going to have the Jack Campbell contract conversation because we got to talk about something.
Well, and we're not mad at Marner anymore, apparently. And Morgan Riley, everyone decided that deal works for them, or doesn't, but it's done. So, yeah, I guess we step on up, goaltending. You're the next in line, the next contestant on The Price is Right. The thing about the Leafs that must be so hard for you to talk about on the show is, and I guess this is perfect proof, none of this matters. Get to the playoffs, show us then.
Oh, yeah, it's what we knew it was going to be. It was the nihilistic season. You know, Sandin and Liljegren have played better than maybe we thought. Jake Muzzin is a concern. The bottom six can't score. They win when the core four scores. Like, this kind of is exactly what we thought we were going to get from the team.
If they stay basically healthy, they should make the playoffs. Once they're in the playoffs, I have no idea. I was thinking about Dubas this morning, though. I was thinking about how there's something really impressive about a guy who says, we're going to let this marinate and we've got the right ingredients and they just need the experience and we're going to get over the hump and they're going to be great. And if he's right, that is a poise and a maturity that you have to say is really impressive. If he's wrong, they're fucked. People will say, oh, Washington took a long time to win. Yeah, but their team really didn't look anything like the one that won looked pretty different from the ones that lost. What about Tampa Bay? Well, you know, you kept Hedman, you kept Stamkos, but God, there was a lot of turnover at the top, you know? Guys who were good on the cup-winning teams weren't there on those first teams. I don't know if this, like, I don't know if this market will allow a 10-year journey, you know?
If they win a playoff round, like, here's the thing. They won't allow a 10-year journey where it ends with them losing in the first round every year, but then no one should be in favor of that.
Leafs are boring. Let's talk about the Jays. What's your panic level about the free agency situation?
They're only going to be able to keep, of the three, I think they'll be able to keep one.
And do you think it's going to be Ray?
It makes the most sense because, you know, Pete Walker, the team was able to, you know, the team certainly played an important role in his transformation. So that seems to make the most sense.
It's funny because if I asked myself if it had to be one, who would it be? My brain says it should be Robbie Ray, but my heart says Marcus Semien. Having really
good
starting pitching, especially with Ryu getting older, and you don't know what you can get from him moving forward, the logical thing says, yeah, get the starting pitcher. But God, so many of these guys have a hot year and then go away. It might be an expensive bet.
The thing is like the Jays, there's really nothing new here until something happens. And I think we all have the same sort of level of insecurity. And then Scott Boras comes in and that makes us nervous. But then we remember Hyunjin Ryu is a Scott Boras client. So maybe we're less nervous. But I got a topic for you, Bob.
Okay.
You know who, when I think about Connor McDavid, do you know who I think about?
John Tortorella.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Whew, okay. I'm going to get comfy. Go for it.
And you're right. It starts with Tortorella. It starts with Tortorella saying that Connor McDavid's got to shut up about the calls and he's got to change his game for the playoffs. And then everyone gets angry at John Tortorella. He's the easy target. The sad thing is he's not wrong. And he's not wrong because the NHL isn't right when it comes to the playoffs. And I was thinking about this because Connor McDavid scored a goal against four members of the New York Rangers. It was crazy. It was wonderful. It will never happen come the playoffs because of the way they call games or they don't call games. Now, how this leads to Giannis Antetokounmpo. He won the MVP not because of his defense, though it was very good. It's because he scored 50 points in the clinching game. He went to the free throw line 19 times because he deserved to be at the free throw line 19 times. Connor McDavid deserves a ton more calls, but he doesn't get them.
This is a really great point, and I love the comparison, and it's well thought out and well researched. And it raises, I think, an important point, which is when you're building a team, how much do you build a team for the playoffs and how much do you build a team that's just good? And by this, I mean, increasingly, it feels like in most of these sports, this isn't the case in football, but certainly in basketball and in hockey, the two sports you picked. It feels like the regular season and the playoffs are just played differently. You don't feel it in baseball. Pitching is pitching, hitting is hitting, but it's called differently. Effective strategies change from one season to another, like the regular season versus the postseason. And this is the Leafs question in a lot of ways. They look like they could thrive in the regular season. They did last year, but they get into the playoffs and it just feels something's missing. And maybe you have the wrong kinds of players, Mitch Marner being chief among them. Like you talk about Connor McDavid, you know, he's had at least a little playoff success on a, you know, in an organization that's been really terrible. But we saw Mitch, who's like all world during the regular season, utterly invisible in the playoffs. And Giannis was always criticized. And the fact that he got to the line so much in that game, that's playoff basketball. So let me now, with that preamble, throw this back to you. If you're Ken Holland or you're Kyle Dubas or you're anybody, do you just get the best players? Or do you get the best players for the playoffs?
No, you get the best players, and then you've got to convince them they got to change. And the sad thing here is is that's not the way it should be. The Super Bowl MVP in the last 20 years has twice been a defensive player. 18 other times, it's been a guy who can score. And hockey's the one where it's like, yeah, scoring's very important, but that third liner over there and that other guy, they're going to be able to neutralize you, and the refs ain't going to do a thing about it.
The great thing about hockey is the great thing about Canada, in the sense that there's a sense of teamwork that's fairly pronounced. And in hockey, it means a team like the Canadiens last year, with good goaltending and smart, tough play, you can make it to the final. Like, you don't have to be the best team. You have to be the hardest working, most dedicated team in a lot of instances. And the Canadian context, gets you universal health care. We're all in this together. The bad part of it is hockey is fucking boring at its worst. It's like watching a bunch of grinders slow down a bunch of guys who are really good. And there's a reason why Facebook wasn't created by a Canadian. You know, like, we don't really excel at the, I'm going to step out of line and do something totally crazy. We tend to send those people to the States to ply their trade. But here in Canada, you know, in the States, someone gives you a dollar and you have to turn it into 10. Here, someone gives you a dollar and you petition the government to make sure that it stays a dollar.
And Bob, over time, you'll get an extra dime out of that dollar.
Exactly. And if I can just make sure this dollar never becomes less than a dollar, then in time I will have a dollar 10 and I will go to Muskoka.
Yay.
So I think your point is a really good one. Like, I'm finding it hard to get into hockey this year for a variety of reasons, but also in the back of my mind, and I didn't think I would be this guy, but just in terms of the gameplay, after watching the Leafs shit the bed, I'm just kind of frustrated by a game that doesn't allow its best players to be its best players night after night. Every other league, they put in rules. Like, you know, the quarterbacks, pretty soon you're going to have to, like, apologize to them if you knock them down. But hockey continues to be a game where a guy who makes $1 million a year can shut down a guy who makes $10 million a year. It sounds great until you realize the product's boring.
And that, by the way, that's going to be my opening thought, which is John Tortorella is not the person to be angry at. He's the easy target. He's not the correct target. As we end this, because we only got a couple minutes left.
Oh, we do have only a couple minutes left.
Yeah. By the way, shout out our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, sponsor of this podcast. If you need legal help, advice, anything in between, go to jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. He's our lawyer, should be yours. You get him, boom. Now you don't have to worry about law stuff. You can move on with the rest of your day.
And the fact you call it law stuff is a sign you probably shouldn't represent yourself.
Yes, there you go. Never represent yourself. It seems cool in the movies. Doesn't usually work out well for you. My other quick thought on the whole Tortorella thing is this is what happens when you get it back, when you get hockey back on ESPN. You throw some money, you get this big fancy set, you get Tortorella to say something, then you push it out on the ESPN social media machine, and suddenly everyone's talking.
I was thinking about that too with the Canadian media, where the coverage of that is, wow, it's a good goal, eh? Wow, I love hockey. Do you love hockey? Me too. Let's move on. Like, the desire to never rustle the, you know, like, the protect the shield mentality in the vast majority of the Canadian hockey media means that nobody will say anything interesting about anything. I like the fact that somebody actually steps out and we can debate. Like, the idea that he's an idiot and, you know, what the hell does he know about hockey and blah, blah, blah. That's good for the sport. It's not a problem that, quote unquote, someone doesn't get it. It's good that someone challenges what you think about it.
Could you imagine anyone north of the border saying, hey, Connor McDavid, shut up?
No, are you kidding? That's you know what? And I don't know if I agree or disagree with Tortorella. I lean probably towards what you said. I wish it wasn't true, but it probably is.
Yeah.
But just the idea that you would even hold the game to account, like, here I am yelling about how boring it is, and you're certainly implying the same. You know, like, there's this feeling like no one wants to hurt hockey's feelings.
Yeah.
And that to suggest that it's not the best game exactly as it is somehow a disservice to, like, you can't be a real fan unless you love all of it, you know?
If you criticize it, then to quote Barney, go back to Russia. Goodbye, Bob.
Are we done?
We're done.
But we got more minutes. I'm not done. I wanted to talk to you about being in the movie theater for the first time in 2 years.
Ooh. Ah, did you go?
I did. I went yesterday. I took my daughter and her friend to go see the My Hero Academia movie. It's an anime. It was in Japanese with subtitles. The girls were happy. We smuggled. You smuggle in wine. I smuggle in popcorn. That's where we're at in our lives. And Matt, oh my God, I was so happy to be there. It was great.
I'm so happy for you.
You know, I didn't realize how much I missed. You know, Shang-Chi, I was going to see it in the theater. And then I found out, you know, that it was going to be on Disney Plus, which it is today. And I thought, well, I'm not going to go. I'll just watch it, you know, in my house. And now I feel like I wish I had seen it in the theater, even though technically I get it free now. Well, not free, but with the price of what I'm paying for everything else. But just the experience of sitting there in those big chairs and the sound and the screen, like, unless you have a super amazing TV, nothing beats that.
It's so true. It is. And like, we grew up going to the movies. I was thrilled the first time. I'm glad you went. I'm glad your daughter had a good time. It's another little of just reclaiming normalcy as much as one can, because there's still masks and such, but and proof of vaccination. But I'm so glad you went. But sneaking in popcorn would be a lot harder. You know, wine I put in a water bottle, but the popcorn, that's a large bag.
Here's the thing, Matt. When there's kids involved, there's always backpacks.
Right.
And backpacks are basically larceny waiting to happen.
That's a good tag. You're right. And also the security at the movie theater, it's like a 19-year-old making minimum wage who is, you know, doesn't really care.
I walked in with pops, like cans of Pellegrino, popcorn, chocolate bars, like everything the kids could want. It's like I did the food version of hiding in the trunk going into a drive-in.
I have this image of you bringing the microwave and an extension cord so you could pop the popcorn in the movie theater.
Get a little George Foreman grill, get some hot dogs going.
Oh yeah, just bring her all in. Nothing, and Leslie Nielsen, nothing to see here.
Well, we'll go with you and Amy next time, and you guys bring the wine, and we'll bring a bunch of potato salad. We'll throw down like a picnic, like one of those gingham cloths, and we'll have a picnic.
What wine should I get, Bob?
Whatever you think's best, Matt. Just pick a region and go with it.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom, and if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.